Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. This is the postgame podcast from the Timberwolves deflating Game 2 blowout loss to the Memphis Grizzlies on Tuesday night in the first round series. I'll give you my three biggest takeaways from this game, as well as why I think the Timberwolves will be okay on Thursday. I don't think the sky is falling. This is not the end of the world. We're going to cover all that and also what counter adjustments the Wolves need to make to Memphis's adjustments on Tuesday. It's all coming up. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Peek and I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. And I guess a not-so-happy Wednesday following the Tuesday night Game 2 blowout loss to the Grizzlies for the Wolves. This is the postgame podcast. Plenty to talk about on the show here today. First of all, though, a big thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every single day. A reminder that Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere. That includes YouTube as well as all of your favorite audio platforms. Of course, Apple, Odyssey, Spotify, anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, you can hear this show. And again, thank you for making us your first listen. All right. Today on the show, I want to talk about a couple of key takeaways, really three, I guess, overall. I want to start with my biggest one, and then we'll close with, well, actually, I guess this is part of my initial key takeaway as well. We'll get to why all the reasons why I don't think the sky is falling. I don't think this is going to be a five-game series. I don't think the Wolves will lose in five. We'll get to all that here in just a minute. Let's start with my biggest takeaway. My biggest takeaway was how well Memphis was prepared for this game. And this is playoff basketball, right? So it's not a surprise at all. And I know Taylor Jenkins is obviously a great coach and is, you know, finalist for Coach of the Year, even though he won't win the award. He's a great coach. So it's not surprising, but this then bleeds into the last thing I want to talk about, which is how the Wolves could counter-adjust for Thursday. So what did we say after Saturday's game one? We said Steven Adams was borderline unplayable. Not borderline. He should have been unplayable. Karl-Anthony Towns was going to eat his lunch every time he got the ball. The Wolves could put Adams in all kinds of actions, get Towns facing up against Adams, game over. We knew that Jaren Jackson Jr. would play better on Tuesday. That's not an adjustment. That's just something we knew would change. We knew that the Timberwolves were doing a really good job blitzing the Grizzlies pick and roll and could keep Karl-Anthony Towns out of those actions if they needed to, if they were worried about his foul trouble. But on Saturday, it wasn't an issue because Towns was never in foul trouble and they were just making life difficult for John Morant, trying to force him to get around Towns when Towns was showing hard on the perimeter in pick and roll situations. We knew that Jared Vanderbilt had a solid game at times on Saturday, but the matchup seemed kind of weird for him. So we were curious to see how Memphis would, if Memphis would play small at all to try and force the Timberwolves to play small on Tuesday. All these things, and all of it came to fruition. Taylor Jenkins and the Grizzlies made a couple of key adjustments. Number one, Steven Adams still started the game for whatever reason. It felt like the old, it's the veteran, you know, we'll leave him in this role and then we'll pull him, you know, kind of like the honorary. Remember when Irvin Johnson, if you remember the 2003, 2004 Timberwolves and Irvin Johnson, started every game and obviously he was a good player, you know, an important member of those teams, but he basically started and played the first 4 or 5 minutes of each half. It was a little more than that. And then didn't come back in the game at all. He was not part of the crunch time lineup. You know, almost kind of and it's not quite exactly the same thing, but I'm just saying that's what it reminded me of. But Steven Adams started, played only 3 minutes and never saw the floor again the rest of the game. Jaren Jackson Jr. was essentially every time the Wolves ran a pick and roll with Karl-Anthony Towns as the screener, the Grizzlies were switching everything. And with Jaren Jackson Jr. playing the five, the Grizzlies could do that all game long with no issues. And now the question is, how will the Wolves, they didn't adjust to it in game. And by the time they really could have, they were kind of so far down. Its adjustments at that point were pretty much futile. But what do the Wolves do on Thursday night for game three? How do they adjust to the Grizzlies' adjustment? On the other end of the floor, the Timberwolves tried to hide Towns, especially once they got into some foul trouble. And basically anytime the Grizzlies were going to go into a pick and roll action, the Wolves, not every time, but often if it was possible, Towns would switch. There was a couple instances where Patrick Beverley stepped up to try and get in the pick and roll action, make the Wolves more switchable. And they stick Towns, you know, Towns shoots to the opposite wing, essentially to the slot on the other side of the floor. But the Grizzlies, Ja, to his credit, made a couple of great reads, immediately swung the pass to the player that Towns was going to guard. Towns didn't get out to the perimeter fast enough, and that player was able to shoot an open jumper, pump fake, get into the paint, whatever that is. I think we saw that with Dylan Brooks, I think is the player who hurt Towns on it a couple of different times in the game. But the Wolves are trying to get creative to keep Towns from being stuck in a pick and roll with Ja Morant coming downhill at him. It still happened a couple of times because the Grizzlies were so intelligent with their offense. So the number one thing for me is the Grizzlies came ready to play. And it wasn't simply that the players were ready to play. It was that the coaching staff made the requisite adjustments to put their players in the best position to succeed. And I'm not at all, this isn't necessarily a slight against Chris Finch. Maybe some of the in-game stuff is. It's more just that the Grizzlies were well prepared for this, right? The Timberwolves won on Saturday, so Minnesota could have anticipated adjustments for Memphis and surely did, but they wouldn't have known what Memphis was doing until the game started. Now, in-game, it was a one-point game after the first quarter. The second quarter almost got a little out of hand. The Wolves righted the ship, and then things got kind of ugly again, and then the Wolves had a little counterpunch at the end of the first half that made it, I think, an 11-point game at halftime. So it's not like major, major adjustments were needed. If the Wolves had come out of the locker room down 11 with Towns in foul trouble, not playing a great first half, I mean, if they had come out with poise and determination in the third quarter and been ready to be in a street fight like they were in the first quarter when things were rough and tumble and it was a close game, the Wolves would have had a shot down the stretch in this game. At least would not have been a blowout. But Minnesota was flat. It's like they just at halftime just decided, well, let's pack it in. Obviously, the coaching staff wouldn't have done that. I don't know why the players apparently chose to do that. It at least felt that way, right? The effort level was simply not there in the second half for the Timberwolves. But the coaching staff of the Grizzlies made plenty of adjustments for this game. And the question is, will the Timberwolves be able to make counter adjustments here as we move into game three on Thursday? There's a couple of other key takeaways I want to get to that I think are pretty important to talk about, things that I took out of this game that we can kind of highlight moving forward. So we're gonna do that here next. First, though, before we do, let's talk about our friends over at Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for a fraction of the price. That means polarized lenses, well-constructed durable frames, and premium high-end finishes. Also, something you won't find anywhere else is Shady Rays' insane protection program. Shady Rays includes lost and broken protection on every pair. They will send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happened. Give them a try, and if you don't love them, you'll pay absolutely nothing. It's as simple as that. Plus, 10 meals are donated to fight hunger in America when you shop with Shady Rays. Exclusively for our listeners, head to ShadyRays.com and use code LOCKEDON to get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's code LOCKEDON for their best deal of the season. 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses backed by over 150,000 verified five-star reviews. All right, one more thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. A reminder that you can make Locked On Now your second listen. They have nightly recaps of every NBA game with analysis from local experts. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. It's the best way to get caught up on the previous night's action. It's a little easier during the playoffs where there aren't as many games to get caught up on, but still, it's the best way to know exactly what happened the previous night in the league. So be sure to check that out. Okay, additional takeaways from the Timberwolves Game 2 blowout loss. This one's an obvious one, offensive rebounding, and then along with that, points in the paint. The Timberwolves were out offensive rebounded in this game, right? I'll say it this way. The Grizzlies had 14 offensive rebounds. Timberwolves had only four. Overall, the Grizzlies were a +8 on the glass. Remember, the Wolves were actually a +11 on the glass in the first game, which coming into the series, obviously Memphis again, I'll say this till I'm blue in the face. It's important to remember they're the best offensive rebounding team in the league. The Timberwolves were a bottom-3 defensive rebounding team all season. They finished, I believe, 29th in defensive rebound rate. That was a major issue. The Grizzlies won the points in the paint battle. They didn't just win it. They absolutely dominated it 60-34. The Timberwolves were almost allergic to getting to the rim. I said this on the live postcast that I did with Chalenga over at the Locked On Minnesota Sports feed, and also you can listen to the audio on whatever audio platform you're listening to now. I said this to Chalenga. I'm pretty sure Malik Beasley put the ball on the floor and got into the paint as many times as, I don't know, probably Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell combined. I could think of one D'Lo shot in the paint. Ant at one point was like 4 or 5 in the paint. His only miss, he should have gotten a foul call. He didn't, but like he was efficient when he got in the paint. But the Grizzlies were loading up on him, and it was like he was not interested in getting into traffic, which, you know, I talked about this the other day on the show. One of the great things about Ant is he's not going to dribble into a triple team and turn the ball over like, say, Carl Anthony Towns has gone through the stretches in his career. Ant's not going to do that. He's going to make the right read, or he's going to shoot a 25-foot step back, which he did a little bit too often in this game, especially early, and he never found a rhythm. But if he can get downhill and get into the teeth of the defense and create more for his teammates, that's the thing that he could have done, right? I get that the Grizzlies were loading up on him, but Ant didn't even really look all that interested in testing it. He didn't look all that interested in trying to get the Ja Morant whistle. He just didn't want to do that in this game, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So that's a couple things there, right? So the offensive rebound, and obviously the second chance points for Memphis were huge in this game, especially during that second quarter stretch when the Timberwolves had Torian Prince at the 4 and Towns at the 5. And the Timberwolves defense was actually not all that bad in the first half, for most of the first half, until transition started to go crazy. Offensive rebounding going crazy for Memphis. Torian Prince was at the 4, was pulled away from the glass. Torian overall played well in this game, but he had just 2 rebounds in 17 minutes, and he played the 4 for 4 or 5 of those minutes. And it was Towns versus Towns and a bunch of smalls, plus Prince hanging on the perimeter as the de facto power forward against a bunch of big Memphis players who, you know, to the tune of, for the game, 14 offensive rebounds, but 3 or 4 of them were in that early to mid-second quarter. And then shortly after the Timberwolves made the adjustment, they righted the ship. They got within a couple of possessions. Then Towns picks up another foul. And the half kind of closes on a sour note with the Wolves down 11 at halftime. So a little criticism there of the rotation from Chris Finch in the second quarter. Major criticism when it comes to the Timberwolves on the glass in this game, especially the offensive glass. Again, a -8 total for the game, but they gave up 14 offensive rebounds to the Memphis Grizzlies, which is their game. If the Timberwolves cannot keep the Grizzlies off the glass, they're not going to win the series. They have to. The second thing that this is a takeaway, to be clear, this is not a complaint about the officiating. Well, it is, but it's not a biased complaint. It's not a complaint that the officials were, you know, out to get the Timberwolves because they lost by 28. Can't complain about the officials. This is just a note. There was no flow in this game. No flow. I saw that this is Kirk Goldsberry, the fantastic analyst and writer. He works for ESPN. He tweeted during the game, Memphis and Minnesota combined to shoot 33 free throws in the first quarter. That's tied for the most free throws in any first quarter in any game over the last 25 years. Not a playoff game. Any NBA game over the last 25 years, last quarter century, tied for the most total free throws in one quarter. It was not really fun. I mean, the Timberwolves were close. Timberwolves shot a few more free throws than Memphis in the first quarter, and then it felt like they didn't get that many whistles the rest of the game. But there was just no flow to this game, and the Timberwolves need, Finch even said at his end of quarter interview with NBA TV, he talked about how the game started to get more of a flow at the end of the first quarter. And that's what the Wolves, he said that they liked that, right? The Timberwolves like playing in a game with some pace and some flow. Memphis, it's certainly not the grit and grinder Grizzlies, and they do play at the fastest pace in the league. The Wolves and Grizzlies are both in the top 3 in terms of pace in the regular season. But Memphis can still play. It's not grit and grind. It's still fast paced, but they're happy to play the offensive rebound game, the putback game, get in the paint, layups, floaters, draw fouls, all that stuff. They're better at that than the Timberwolves are. And the Timberwolves are okay at offensive rebound, and the Timberwolves can get to the free throw line and they shoot the ball well when they get there. But if the game's going to get mucked up like that, Memphis is better equipped to handle it than the Timberwolves. Now, will every game be like that? I don't know. Game one was for stretches. Certainly, going back to last Tuesday, the play-in game was between the Wolves and Clippers. It's one of the reasons the Wolves really struggled was all the fouls called in that game. In this particular game, Memphis shot 32 free throws. The Wolves shot 28. So still a little bit out of balance, but not grossly so. So, you know, I'm not complaining at all about the weight of the calls. I'm just making an observation that there was no flow to this game because of the way it was officiated in the first quarter. Then all of a sudden, in the second quarter, everything goes. And then back in the third quarter, all of a sudden, whistles everywhere again. Just not good flow to this game at all. And it was disappointing. Two of the teams that play the fastest and score the most points per game of any team in the league, They use up tons of possessions. They're supposed to score a lot of points, but we were instead treated to a total of, 60 free throws between the two teams. By the way, more than half of them in the first quarter alone, which is just bonkers. So here's hoping we don't see that in game three on Thursday. Last thing is, I actually thought, you know, you look at the score and you'd assume if you didn't watch the game that the Timberwolves weren't competitive, this wasn't a competitive game, et cetera. That's not true, at least for the first, you know, two-ish quarters, right? The first half of the game, the Timberwolves came out competitive. And then the thing that's worrisome is that everything snowballed, right? You hit that kind of, you know, the second quarter started to kind of teeter. And then the third quarter, it was woe is us, completely snowballed, got out of control, got up to like 25. The Wolves did go on a 10-3 run. They got it down to 17. I think they got it to 16 briefly at one point later, late third, early fourth quarter. Never got closer than that. It never really felt like they were going to go on a run besides a quick little ant burst. So, competitive first half, right? They came out, they're ready to play. The Grizzlies tried to hit him in the mouth. The Timberwolves hit back. Again, no pace early. And then it was just like Memphis came out of halftime thinking we're gonna step on their neck, we're gonna put this thing away, and split our two home games. And the Timberwolves just kind of said, okay, you can have it. Very disappointing. However, I will say, what bodes well for Thursday, and Chilang and I touched on this again in the live postcast, is the way that this Timberwolves team plays. We've seen this happen. We've seen them get just completely dominated in a game that they shouldn't lose, and then turn around and be really impressive the next time out. We even saw this late in the season. What was it? The loss to Washington, and then I think next time out, Ant had 49, and the Timberwolves won. Granted, they didn't play great besides Ant, I guess, in that game, but that's just one of the more recent examples. But we've seen the Wolves drop games they had no business losing, and this is different because it's Memphis, and they're really good, and it's the playoffs. They're the two seed, right? But then this team can forget really quickly, and that is also maybe what happened here in this game to their detriment, is they were like, oh, it was easy Saturday. You know, it'll be easy again tonight type of a thing. Finch talked after the game. By the way, I think the young team narrative gets completely overplayed in a lot of places, but Chris Finch said something about how like, hey, we got to learn to handle success as well as we have to learn to handle failure. The Wolves did not handle success well in game two. Can they handle this failure well in game three? Can they turn it around and say, okay, we're at home now. Let's buckle down. Let's get this game and get a chance to go up 3-1 going back to Memphis next week. The short memory of this team, and also in some ways the naivety of this team, how naive some of these guys probably are to the whole thing, right? They shouldn't be expecting to win this series. I mean, like, you want them to, but they're clearly the underdogs, right? I mean, they shouldn't beat the 2 seed as the 7 seed. It doesn't happen very often historically, but they truly think that they can. And that's going to help them, obviously. They're going to be able to forget this and say, like, hey, let's go out, let's win on Thursday. We're really good on our home floor. They haven't lost to Memphis on their home floor all season. Malik Beasley had an interesting quote, I think, after practice the other day after shoot-around. He said, hey, we've won more quarters than we've lost against Memphis. I'm paraphrasing, but throughout the course of the season, Minnesota's won more quarters versus Memphis than Memphis has, right? It's the bad ones here and there. You know, they had that really bad fourth quarter and their first loss to Memphis in the regular season when they were leading by double digits going to the fourth. They lost, obviously, this game. The third quarter was a debacle, but they were pretty good otherwise. They, you know, were competitive otherwise. So I think there's truth to all of that. And I think it's entirely likely the Wolves bounce back and play well on Thursday. Okay, a couple final thoughts as well as individual studs and duds here to close out the post-game podcast. We're going to do that here next. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Built Bar. We're officially at that time of year that we've all pretty much given up on our New Year's resolutions, but not for me and not this year. I'm sticking to my resolution to eat right thanks to Built Bar. It almost feels like it's not really a resolution, though, because I actually enjoy eating them. And by the way, if you haven't tried Built Puffs, you need to. There's tons of delicious protein-infused marshmallow flavors with Built Puffs. There's churro, there's coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie. I recently got brownie batter puffs. They're all fantastic, and they're all covered in 100% real chocolate. Go to Built.com and check out the macros chart. You'll be absolutely blown away. Most Built Bars have 130 calories, only 130 calories. They also have just 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams net carbs, four net carbs and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to your average candy bar, which has around 240, 250 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. There's tons of delicious flavors. And if Built thinks the flavor might be good, they'll make it. It will be delicious and it will be good for you. They really are all about the taste. They'll make the bars taste delicious first, and then they figure out how they can make it healthy. And I don't know how they do it, but they really, truly do pull it off every single time. I've never had a Built bar that I did not like. And I mean that. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, let's close this thing out with individual studs and duds, as we always do, and I'll leave you with a couple of parting thoughts here. We'll, of course, have one more show. We'll have Thursday's show leading into the game Thursday night, but we'll do studs and duds first. I'll be frank. I don't think anybody on the Wolves, besides maybe Torian Prince and some stretches of Naz Reid, played well. Overall, I'm not going to give Naz Reid a stud. If you watched a couple of stretches, you may have thought he was good. He really struggled in his first stint. Right when Towns went down with foul trouble in the first half, and that's when Memphis made their initial run. Naz had a pass go between his hands. He had a couple of bad fouls. He missed on a couple of rebound opportunities on both ends of the floor. A rough stretch for Naz. Overall, he was okay because he did have a couple of good stretches, and he finished with a 12-7 with a couple of blocks. Hit a couple of big threes. One was a big momentum. Killed the momentum of the Grizzlies, forced a timeout in the first half. There were positive signs, but he wasn't great overall. So I wanted to say that about Naz. For me, I think you still have to give one. I think you have to give one to Anthony Edwards. And I know he had five turnovers. I know he was nowhere near as good as he was Saturday. But if we're defining the category, and I guess this is me, if I'm defining the category of studs as the Timberwolves' three best players on the floor in this game, I mean, I'm not saying they played well. I'm saying they played better than everybody else on the team. Grading on a curve here, Anthony Edwards has to be one, right? He's the guy who showed some fight in the third quarter. 20 points for the game on 16 shots, not ultra efficient. He was 4-10 outside the arc. Only got to the line twice again, and he needs to attack more. He did have six rebounds, which was good, in a game where nobody else really rebounded. He was, believe it or not, third on the team in rebounds. One assist, one steal, five turnovers, and four fouls committed for Ant. So not a stellar line, but he was probably the Timberwolves' best player that really, played a significant amount. The other player that you could argue was their best player overall in this game is Torian Prince. He was pretty good off the bench. He had that stretch as a power forward, not his fault. He was inserted as the four, didn't have a great showing in terms of getting on the glass at all in the second quarter. But for the game, 12 points and 4-7 shooting for Torian, 2-4 outside the arc, 2-2 on free throws, 2 rebounds, 2 steals, 1 assist, 1 block, a pretty good all around game from Torian Prince. And I think we have to give him some credit for being one of the few Timberwolves that genuinely played well in this game. My third one is going to be Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't know. I mean, like, nobody played well. I mean that. Karl-Anthony Towns, 15-11, 2 blocks, 1 assist, 4-7 shooting. He only had 7 field goal attempts, only 1 3-point attempt. It was very early in the game, 0-1 outside the arc. It is simply unacceptable for Karl-Anthony Towns to attempt 7 field goals and 1 3-pointer. I get that he was in foul trouble. He sat for some, final 6-7 minutes for garbage time. I get all that. He's got to shoot the ball more than 7 times in 28 minutes. He's got to shoot more than 1 3 in 28 minutes. He did shoot 7 of 8 from the line. He got to the free throw line. A lot of that was very early in the game. I think 6 of his 8 free throw attempts were in the first quarter, if I'm not mistaken. But when he was on the floor, he had a couple of bad turnovers. At least one was when things were kind of out of hand and he was trying to make something happen. This was generally an okay performance for him, given the circumstances and how bad everyone else played. Obviously, the Wolves need more. They need more than they got from him. He's got more in him than what he did Saturday. We all know that. And this is a matchup the Timberwolves should be able to exploit when the Grizzlies play small. So I'm curious to see if that is, back to my previous point, what Finch's counter adjustment to what Taylor Jenkins and the Grizzlies adjusted to in this game. If the Grizzlies are going to go small and take Adams out of the game, can the Wolves counter by getting the ball to Towns more in the post? They tried to do it a little bit in the third quarter, but things were already kind of disheveled and out of whack. The Wolves never got into a rhythm offensively. The Grizzlies are obviously going to crash Towns hard in the post with a double, maybe even a triple team. And the Wolves weren't making open threes in this game anyway. They were 29% from 3, 11 of 38. But if they can get their spacing down, if they can get Beverly, Russell, Beasley, Jaden McDaniels, these guys who can knock down open threes, Anthony Edwards dotting the perimeter, and they dump it into Towns and he gets doubled and triple teamed. The Grizzlies have an active, athletic, long defense, but the Timberwolves should be able to generate some open jumpers out of a Towns post-up. But if the Grizzlies are going to try and guard Karl-Anthony Towns with Jaren Jackson, yeah, he's a good defender. But what was some of the success in game one? It was getting Jaren Jackson into foul trouble, getting a blocking foul on him by putting Towns in the post against him. If Towns is under control, not too emotional at home in Minnesota on Thursday, that could be something the Wolves could look at doing, is trying to get Jaren Jackson Jr. in foul trouble by getting the ball to Towns in the post. Maybe it's less straight pick and roll action on the top, at the top. You know, there's a few different ways they could take that. Okay. A dud for this game, man, who didn't play poorly. I mean, Jaden McDaniels had a rough, rough game. He did have three blocks. That was nice, but he was 1 of 7, missed all 4 3-point attempts. I'm surprised to see he didn't have any turnovers. I feel like he had at least one, but 2 points in 21 minutes, not anything like what he was in game one of the series. He's probably the biggest one for me. Pat Bev missed a couple of open threes. D'Angelo Russell, another stinker, 11 points, 4 assists, 2 turnovers in 28 minutes, 3 of 11 shooting, 2 of 7 outside the arc. I don't know. Pick your guy, basically, besides the studs. I don't know. Nobody else really played well. This was just a bad game. And obviously it happens. One more big picture point. If you came into Memphis saying the Wolves would split it, obviously we'd all be happy with that. I think after game one, there's no denying how disappointing game two was. And it's also the taste in their mouth coming back to Minnesota. If you flipped it, if you could have things the way, you know, the Suns and the Pelicans series, the Wolves would have lost game one. Hopefully it wouldn't have been a blowout. And then won game two and have a little momentum coming to Minnesota, that maybe feels a little different. The Wolves are going to have to take a step back and say, like, hey, in a vacuum, this series is 1-1. It's a 5-game series now. We get to play the next two, or the first two games of this 5-game series, in air quotes, in Minnesota. Go win a game on Thursday. You might even win on Saturday. And then you're up 2 games in the series with 3 more cracks to win 1 more game against Memphis, a team that, if that's the case, they will have a winning record against them this season if they go up 3-1 in the series. So, you know, obviously the first step is winning Thursday, which is very doable. But I'm just curious to see how the Wolves compartmentalize this, because, again, a split on the road as the 7 seed is the goal, right? That's the realistic goal. It's just disappointing to come back down to earth after the win on Saturday, and there's really no denying that. Okay. We'll obviously have a show again Thursday. We're daily Monday through Friday if you're new to the program. So we'll preview Thursday night's game. I'll give you a couple more specifics about what I'm looking for in that game. You know, taking a step back, taking 24 hours to think, digest this game on Tuesday, looking ahead to Thursday night's game. Then we'll do the live postcast following the game on Locked On Sports Minnesota and also on all of our audio feeds. But we're live on the YouTube channel at Locked On Sports Minnesota post game with myself and Chilanga from Zone Coverage in the CND NBA podcast. So be sure to check that out. And then, of course, we'll do the post-game pod Thursday as well. And then game 5 will be on, is that right? No, game 4 will be on Saturday. Man, I'm already getting ahead of myself with this. That will be on Saturday. So thanks again for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. It's greatly appreciated. If you do listen on Apple, go ahead and leave a review. It's really appreciated. You can also subscribe on YouTube, watch the show on YouTube. You can follow, or you can listen anywhere else, Apple, Google, Spotify, Odyssey. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and my account, which is at BBeacon with 2 B's, 2 E's, C-K-E-N. A reminder that Locked On Wolves is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Of course, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. A reminder about the Locked On, the Locked On Minnesota vertical. You can check out the Locked On Wolves postcast, as I mentioned, after the game Thursday. But overall, the Locked On Sports Minnesota YouTube channel and podcast feed have tons of great shows. So if you're a Twins fan, a Wild fan, a Gophers fan, I guess not at the moment, not Gophers because that's not in season, but Twins, Wild, Gophers, Vikings, all that's over at Locked On Sports. The Locked On Wolves postcast, of course, is part of the all new Locked On Sports Minnesota. And like I said earlier, available live on YouTube right after the game and on all the Locked On Sports Minnesota podcast feeds, as well as the Locked On Wolves audio feeds as well. So that's all upcoming again following the game Thursday, as it was on Tuesday. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.